here, episode 9 of Underground Espionage. Tara, how is it going?
Mike, I was just trying to reckon how many fluid ounces of water, liquids I've had today, hydrating fluids I've had today.
I'm sure it's
more than 48 ounces, less than 80. How do you
feel
about that?
Can we pull that pop screen back a little bit?
It is very. It's not even close. Okay, okay.
Now it's not
close. Okay, now it's not close. Well, I was trying not to touch this, but now, and then that window's open, and I'm going to be distracted by the neighbor. I know, but now I can look around. It's like even more distracting. Well, it's not more distracting than a digital frame. No, that's insanity. Can you imagine? I can't imagine. Well, you wonderful people here over at Underground Espionage, we're just enjoying. Was that the first album by The Church?
Yes, we were listening to the first album by The Church.
I'm not very familiar with it. His vocals, Mike, are really different. Mike was curating it for me so that I could experience.
It's been many times each year we sort of rediscover a band or a band that we've known a few songs from, and then all of a sudden dive deep into.
Yeah, it's like a band you liked, but then you never like got obsessed with, and then you just get obsessed with them all over again.
This year has been The Church, and in fact, we're going to go see them in July. But yeah, the first record's amazing. It's really good. His vocals almost sound like
Christian Death,
like Christian Death, early Robert Smith to me. It was like almost like Boys Don't Cry era Robert Smith a little bit.
But he's a little more like a little more sassy.
But it's really good. The songs are really good. And yeah, we've been deeply into them. So excited to be going to see them in July.
Like a dramatic kind of tone of like, not complaining. Like, I don't know the right word for it, but just kind of a dramatic emphasis on words that very much is exciting.
Yeah, great band. And actually, I'm enjoying something that I've also gotten into this year, rediscovered and re-gotten into this year, that being Guinness.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, when I first started drinking, it was Guinness. Guinness and Maker's Mark are the two drinks I first, when I was in college and started drinking. And it's been a while. I've had some Guinnesses overseas, be over in the UK and I'd have a Guinness, but it's been a while since it's been my go-to, and completely like we should on St. Patrick's Day. Well, I guess St. Patrick's Day weekend, the Saturday, we went out and I was like, I'm going to have Guinness tonight.
Yeah, like Gray was DJing. We were having a great time.
And man, I just enjoyed the hell out of it and actually talked to someone else and I was like,
we all kind of like took a Guinness pact that evening. Yeah. We're like, you drinking Guinness? We're all drinking Guinness. I'll get the Guinness. Whose turn is it to get the Guinness?
Here, who we were with that night, has continued that. And then I talked to someone else who wasn't here. I was like, when was the last time you had Guinness? They're like, actually, I had over the weekend for St. Patrick's Day. And I'm like, did you like it? He's like, I loved it.
I loved it. I felt great. Like, you don't feel all bloated. Well, it's really, and I was always a bitch about Guinness. I was like, I don't like it. It's not carbonated enough.
Well, here's the
terrible
thing about Guinness is it's one of the more deceiving beers because it's rich and creamy.
Yeah.
It is very low in alcohol and it is less calories than most beers. So it's actually a light beer.
It's great.
I'm telling the people, Tara.
Do you know what's crazy?
I've had this conversation. Like, telling the people.
Like, look, it is crazy, like, how quiet is in here. I feel like I'm speaking differently. I feel like I'm talking weird. Like, do we sound strange? Like, I feel like when everybody hears this, they're going to be like, why aren't the Connollys screaming right now?
Well, look, we're having a great day. And because as this comes out, the day this episode comes out, the day you're hearing this, if you listen to this the day that it comes out, it would be exactly a year ago that we were on a plane, Japan Airlines, flying to Japan. And in some ways, we've never left. In some ways, we think about it every single day.
And that day that we were flying out, like, again, the film selection was because of this anniversary. It was due to this anniversary.
Yes.
But it's all the anniversary of something else, Mike, other than our wonderful trip to Japan, really having that entire world open up to us and then just longing to go back there. But in addition to that, Michael, what is today?
It is Thursday, because that is the day the episodes come out.
Thursday. Well, other than Thursday, what is it?
Tara, I couldn't tell what you are.
It's the anniversary of your birth. Oh. And so maybe we're in a little bit of silly celebration mode. And because it's the anniversary of birth, like, we were sitting here on this very same couch a moment ago, not recording. And we were discussing donuts and donut options. We were like, should we be recording this? And I don't know if we should have, but I was presented this with this quandary where, like, I wanted to get my guy a little treat because it's birthday season, right? Birthday week, as they say in California, which I had not experienced prior to this. And I was at a Dunkin' Donuts, right? And I said, I'm going to get a blueberry cake donut. What donut should I bring home to Mike? What donut will he be excited by? And it was like a pretty tough decision. Although I thought I got you a blueberry cake donut just like me, but I didn't. I got you a glazed cake donut, which opened up this entire conversation.
I'm incredibly happy with that. I am a fan of it. I loved what you brought me. It was great.
Well, but I want to ask you, Mike, because I was so curious. I wanted to know if I knew your donut selection.
This is the underground donut section.
Yes. So it's very much not underground because it is Dunkin'.
You know
so
what? Mike, in some ways, it's even more underground.
What are your top three? What are your top three Dunkins? Like, name your top three, and then we can discuss our bottom.
I mean, whatever. I'm just gonna go with donut in general. I don't okay. necessarily.
It doesn't
feel,
have to be from Dunkin'. Yeah, just exactly. Like, yeah. What are your top three?
Like, what is my go-to if I'm at a place where there are donuts? So I do like a glazed cake. So I like the plain one that you got. I mm-hmm. would like a blueberry. Yep. I would go for one of those for sure.
We are both fans of the cake style, and we prioritize the non-chocolate varieties on the cake.
Correct. Yeah. If I'm to get a chocolate donut, I would like it. I would like custard in that donut. Yeah. I would also take maybe like a strawberry in there, you know, like in that donut.
Chocolate with strawberry? Does that exist?
Yeah. Had it here at California Donuts.
See, that doesn't tempt me in any way.
But I would not. Either way, I want the custard in it.
Yeah,
and then like a sugar with a jelly in it. Those would be or like a lemon custard.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Lemon custard.
So
yes,
like those three in some variation would be what I would get.
Yeah, for me the fruit if we're gonna go fruit gel, like lemon gel, love it, great. You can kind of spread around, do what you want. Cherry gel, I'm a big fan. I don't know what it is about fake cherries. But when it's the apple gel, I think it's trash and I hate it. Like
I disagree.
I don't
totally
like
disagree.
Apple gel. Like if it's a whole donut with a hole in the middle, like, and then it's got the apple gel on top and there aren't enough chunks, I do not want that donut.
I don't know what donut you're speaking of, but I would absolutely. I do like an apple donut. And
I don't
actually,
like the gel. I want chunks of apples. Like I want an apple fritter. Apple,
I love
fritter,
an apple fritter
all day long. Yeah. But I don't want the like gel, the apple gel. I keep saying it. I don't like that.
I'm pretty much open to any ultimately. Like ultimately, I'm not very, there's not one I'm like, gross, get it away from me.
I tend to not get the jelly filled just because I make a giant mess out of them.
Yeah, I get that.
So like I don't generally opt for those, and I shy away from the chocolate top filled ones because I never know what's inside. Like you think you can predict what's going to be in them and you're like, I assume it's custard. Like I want like
Boston cream donut.
Right? But if you don't know and this box is just laid out before you and you have to pick a random donut, and if I pick up like what I think is a Boston cream and it's full of like a mushy chocolate.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't hate them. I just don't want to.
Okay.
Eat
actually,
them.
No. But there you go. That would probably be my least tempting.
Yeah.
Would be a chocolate cream filled donut.
Yeah. Like
that is not very tempting.
Chocolate.
To me.
Yeah. Not tempting at all. It's
that's
like,
not very tempting.
For
to
some
me.
Reason, it's like you have the lovely like highlight of the bitter chocolate on top. You don't need to stuff it full of more chocolate. And then, for me, that I don't want, and that's why I don't go for any. Like of the Boston cream, because if it's not an eclair or a Boston cream that I'm mad, or if I think that it's full of the yummy pudding custard and instead it's full of whipped cream, I'm pissed off. I don't want the whipped cream in the middle. I think it's gross. Like I would take that in.
Yeah, that wouldn't be my
like at a horn.
Go-to,
like if I had like a Like a crusty horn, like that's made out of like croissant dough, something layered. I would eat that.
Well, I'll say, speaking of Japan, one of my favorite treats was the
strawberry horns.
I
they were delicious.
Killed those.
But I don't want it inside of a donut. And to me, okay.
I mean, I miss I miss all the Japanese.
Oh my god. I'm just gonna say my number one least favorite donut, Mike, which was kind of like we started recording because I was like, I gotta tell you, Mike. This is the donut I do not want. And I feel like people love this donut. One, the chocolate-filled donut. And then just a glazed donut with chocolate glazed top and sprinkles. I do not like it. Because it's sending mixed messages.
It's not chocolatey enough. Yeah.
The sprinkles are chunky. It's too sweet. It's no fun. Like, I agree with your point that you like to feel like Homer Simpson and get a pink glazed donut with the sprinkles.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Like Homer, yeah.
Or the white glazed donut. It's a classic. But the chocolate, like, it's not chocolatey. You're like, I'm looking at chocolate, I don't taste chocolate. And the chocolate with the colorful sprinkles, not even chocolate sprinkles, I hate that donut.
No, I hear you.
I don't want that donut.
Yeah, I hear you.
If that's the only donut available, I'm like, I don't need a donut.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is we discovered, I mean, we're coming up on 9 years here. But we, you know, you discover when you have the vision of what LA and California is like, yoga and vegan.
I was like, we're going to be
move
so
here,
healthy.
You realize
it's
burgers and donuts and pizza is what's out here.
LA is
and
burgers
so we,
and donuts and pizza.
So
that's
we
really
made
it.
A pact when we moved here to basically avoid trying donuts because we know ourselves.
Yeah, we know.
Do enjoy these things. Yeah. It's just we know we would get out of hand. So it's a rare treat that we – and I think, you know, we have spaced it out over 9 years.
And I was walking past a Dunkin' and I thought it'd be like a fun
thing. It's a good time. We're remembering our great trip last year. Like I said, some ways we never left. We think about it all the time. We talk about it all the time. And it is
I miss that ham and tartar sauce at the Family Mart.
Yeah, I miss the ham and cheese buns.
Managed to procure a Family's Boss coffee, which we really enjoyed.
Yeah, that was like our go-to cold brew from the Family Mart. We'd go down. I would go down to the hotel, get the breakfast at the hotel, which was it was like a beef curry rice with an egg.
Yeah, it was good.
Tara would
eventually
be getting ready for didn't you come down one time or no? Yeah, you
had
it one time, right?
Two times.
No, only
one time.
Oh, yeah. In Tokyo, you came down.
Yeah, I did. So, but here's the thing,
mostly,
everybody, in my defense, like, getting ready, when we were in Japan, I had to get ready for the entire day. So I had to shoot myself in the face with my makeup gun in a way that would last the entire day. Like, we leave that morning and I won't get back that night. So I had to make all that shit stick. Like, I had to do my hair in a way that's not coming down. I had to do, you know, 12, 18 hours worth of makeup, right? So, so, you know, it takes a little more time.
No one's judging you.
No. Well, that's okay. I mean, they can't because I'm not, I just don't want to lend the perception that I'm like a morning diva.
No, but obviously
I need to prepare ahead.
I would get up, jump in the shower, go down, get to breakfast while you got ready, and then I'd eat my breakfast, and then I'd go to the Family Mart, get you breakfast, a ham and tartar, get a couple Family's Bosses, so we'd have them for the whole day.
Family's Boss, throw them in my purse.
Stock up on the ham and cheese buns that eventually got sold out because I talked them up too much.
You did. You sold them too hard.
Yeah, but I miss it. And luckily we can go back there, listen to the Geo Live LP that just came out staring at right now that we've listened to a bunch. Yeah. And we wanted to go back there today with Godzilla. So we picked up the brand new restoration of Godzilla versus Biollante. So that is our main feature for the day because, like I said, we haven't left, and it's crazy to think that it's been a year that we were on that plane watching Godzilla. We watched Zardoz, we watched Day of the Locusts, we had some beverages,
we had
the best airplane food that I've ever had.
It was fantastic. I had a curry.
And it ended, I did too, we both of them. Yeah, we had the same thing. And then the flight ended with them giving me a birthday present, and that the airplane, the little airplane.
It's what I'm looking at it right now. It's right behind you in front of the glowing orb.
It was amazing because in a lot of ways, I totally forgot it was my birthday.
Yeah, we were traveling the entire day.
Well, we were going, it was like the biggest trip of our entire life.
Yeah,
so it was like,
I'm so excited.
I wasn't, it did. I mean, I knew, but I didn't know. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was like, well, I don't know. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, I still in some ways feel the way, but I appreciate the donut. Tara, I know tonight we're going to be going to our favorite. We're going to have some steaks and some martinis at our favorite restaurant. Mm. So I that's the kind of thing, right? I'm gonna have
roast beef.
I think it's, you know, it's especially for like guys, it's like caring too much about your birthday is pretty cringe.
Yeah.
But I also think that totally ignoring it and not giving yourself a nice dinner, you should give yourself a nice dinner.
A little treat. Well, I mean, I see you. I know that you're like, it's too cringe to care about your birthday for guys.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like, I don't like to look forward to something or build something up and then get disappointed.
Well,
like, I really have always been like, I don't want to get all excited about something because I don't want to get so disappointed in it. So I always try to like pretend like the thing is going to suck. I'm like, oh, my birthday's going to suck. It's cursed. I always tell myself it's cursed and it's going to be a shit day.
That's a terrible.
So if anything happens that's nice, I'm happy about it.
Well, your birthday this year is going to be great because we're going to be having a nice home party here watching WrestleMania. So yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited for your birthday.
Now I am. See, but that's a great thing to be excited about.
Yeah. So yes, that is what we'll be doing for your birthday, watching WrestleMania. We're going to be eating some steak and probably eating some great food, having some great drinks. I'm probably going to have some Guinness.
You better. Well, look, I'm excited about, like, I did have a thing that I have just learned about, and it was inspired by Godzilla, but what kind of a mood was I in when we watched this? Can I read my notes?
Now I'm nervous. So go for it, Tara.
It says Janus Films, J. Anus. Tara, look up anus etymology. That's a Tara thing to do. And usually I give myself little homework assignments, like things that I'm thinking about while we're watching. So the first thing that I think while watching this film is look up the etymology of the anus. And I did not, actually. I don't know where that word comes from. I'll look it up, tell you about it next week.
But hey, oh, hey.
But then I say, I love this already. This title sequence is amazing. How do helicopters even work? Tara, look that up too. Like, Tara, why can't I just sit back and enjoy this? I've given myself so much homework.
Because you know you're doing it for an episode. But hey, speaking of anuses and Japan, you know.
Oh, that's true. The biggest thing that came out of that
is
well, not the
bidet.
Biggest, but a great thing that came out.
Yeah,
of that.
Let's be, you know, let's not like, you know.
Bidet.
The biggest home improvement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would be the bidet, and boy, oh boy, guys, girls, get yourself a bidet. It's very gettable, and
achievable goal. I installed it in less than 5 minutes, and then
give yourself a little bidetcation.
That's exactly right. I do think we probably have coined the term bidetcation.
We've mentioned it to people, and people popped. Like they never heard it before. So
I'm going to claim bidetcation.
And it was you.
Yeah. So like, and it's like, I was thinking about, you know, you turn the bidet on, you do it like a respectable amount of time. Like kind of like the time when we were in Japan, this year ago and Mike's trying out the bidet for the first time and I'm outside of the door and I hear, this very, very kind of muffled, sweet giggling. And I'm like, oh, you trying the bidet, huh? He's in the bathroom. And all I hear is, hee, 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 hee. Doesn't have his phone. He doesn't do that. And then I knew exactly what it was. And that's the bidet. And that's what a bidetcation can do for you. It's when you turn on the bidet and you're like,
just let it rock
for a minute. Maybe I just kind of move around. And I was just thinking about, like, maybe like the gif of people's faces on a bidet. It'd be fun to like take different close-ups, like face on the, like the thoughtful face, the surprised face, like the different faces that somebody makes on their bidet.
Yeah, no, it's amazing and really recommend everyone get one. For what, you know,
there are many levels.
Just go for the achievable level. It's whatever you get is good.
Yeah.
Eventually someday we want to have a super scientific, sci-fi bidet. But you know,
yeah, with a light and a heated seat, and
Tara said she wanted it with the Godzilla theme song playing.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? Yeah. Every time you turn on the bidet, Wait, how does that thing? Yeah. You turn it on. Like, wouldn't that be amazing? So you could like maybe like crank it, and it's like you turn like Godzilla's face, you know, on the side of your bidet, and it's like na-na-na-na-na-na. And then you can like his little Godzilla claws coming on the side. You can like adjust your stream with it.
Yeah, look, look. I think here in Underground Espionage, we dole out life advice. And take it, don't take it, but we're saying bidet is okay. Well, Tara, Godzilla versus Biollante, 1989, came out January 1st of 1990. So, you know, it's really, you know, maybe it debuted at 11:59 at some theaters, you know, New Year's Eve, but this would be it's the first film of the modern era. Return of Godzilla came out in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the bridge from the Showa era to the Heisei era. But and it does pick up where that movie left off, but really this kicks off this great era of Godzilla movies it's the era that actually has continuing characters and stories.
Yeah, Mickey as well,
the,
they should be.
The psychic chick in this
youth,
movie.
The psychic youth
in this movie. And this movie,
as well she should, because she's like a wonderful element.
And this
you're gonna
is,
have some more supernatural.
You know, considered by many to be one of the greatest Godzilla movies of all time. In fact, I was having a conversation with somebody who is a massive Godzilla fan, and he said that Biollante is his favorite kaiju villain.
Wow.
And
I mean, that's
reasonable. Can see that. I would agree. I think
absolutely
also in this era
that
I'm excited to show you is Destroya, which is a few years later. I would also put Destroya up there, but boy, Tara, I knew how much you would love Biollante. I knew how much you love this movie, and guess what? I was right.
Yeah, you knew it. So you knew it, so you didn't even need that to be confirmed, because you already knew how I would feel before it happened. But there are so many elements to this that I just genuinely enjoy. One, the soundtrack, the guitar solos. Like, you get a lot of guitar solos, but I like
it. It's an odd soundtrack. I mean, it does utilize some of the classic Godzilla songs. It has some good stuff, but we did find when we were watching the extras that the composer, a lot of the songs were not composed while watching the movie. They're just songs he composed.
He just composed them.
So it does make sense.
Blindly composed.
That there are points where it doesn't seem to totally match up, and there's a reason for that.
And there's some really unusual pairing. So first off, like the modernization of it by being like, let's throw on some guitar solos in this bad boy. It was like something that I appreciated. But then, yes, Mike, if we're going to address the non sequitur aspects, there are these weird fight scenes that are just like kind of like it's what would be like a buddy movie montage portion, but it's playing over a fight scene. It's very strange, and we can talk about
that.
Well,
it just turns out the composer
didn't see the film. Blindly composed what he would think would happen in this. So that makes a lot of sense, but it is always. I don't know the right word. I was going to say interesting, and then I was like satisfying. And those are not the right words. It's fun, but I'm trying not to say fun. I enjoy when there is that disparity between what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I like the ride. Yeah, I like to let it unfold before me. I like the strangeness of it, I guess, is what I enjoy.
Of course, a lot of movies we like. I mean, obviously, last week we talked about Black Cat. I mean, that has, you know, that's all that movie is, you know.
Yes it's confusing, and you're like, am I misunderstanding the plot right now? Like, is something happy happening right now? It looks like these giant kaiju are trying to like murder each other, but instead I think maybe I'm like at an exposition phase where they're supposed to be like romping through a field and nothing really is going to happen. So that's great.
This has a lot of elements in the movie, a lot of characters, a lot of strange subplots.
But I like the B-moviness of it. The Saradia element, which is the like fake Saudi Arabian country with the global espionage that's occurring.
There's that, and then there's...
And it's incredibly, like, cheesy and very... And it's campy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's the camp element.
And then there's a great, as you so succinctly put it, the psychic youth element, goes through, like I said, that goes through this era, this next few years of Godzilla movies. That aspect continues.
Then there's the, like, sci-fi element where it's like, we will explain this with science. Like, we're really going to work it out and tell you how, like, this is, like, a probable thing.
And then there's
thing.
The biotechnology. Yeah. This is a lot going into it. And then Godzilla himself is definitely in the more evil Godzilla, whereas obviously in the Showa era, it started going more into the campy kids, which we love too.
Godzilla, bigger eyes, less sharp teeth.
Which, totally love those movies. But this era now brings it back to Godzilla being a real menace and a threat.
Yeah.
But then also plays with the idea of is he the almost anti-hero thing of Godzilla, where he is the enemy, but sometimes he is the reluctant hero because is the kaiju he's fighting worse than him, right? So it's
how do they get rid of another kaiju with a kaiju?
Yeah. So this era is so exciting, and I really do. Like I said, we picked up the Criterion restoration. I really hope Criterion does the others, because I know all the Blu-rays are out of print now. So hopefully they're going to be doing some of those, because this looks amazing. But Tara,
I'm looking at my notes. They like, I'm saying the Godzilla invasion portion is like, it's like Danny Elfman music.
Yeah, it
sounds
is
like
weird.
Home Alone. Like, it's just wild orchestral activity, and then you get the like, the ship Super Times 2, having like video game
as
theme
Super X 2, as Tara was referring to it as Super Times 2.
No, it's Super Times 2. Gotcha. Super Times 2, it's like a video game, and it has pew pew pews, but then it has like Indiana Jones Star Wars music.
Yeah,
it's
so there's a lot of conflicting things that go on
Star Wars
this
Indiana
movie.
Jones.
But Tara, will you give a quick Tara synopsis of Godzilla versus Biollante?
Okay. I don't
Tara,
know if
I told you we're going for no
we're
edits.
No
on
edits,
this.
And I'm trying because
it's late. It's
really
actually
trying to thwart this.
Down to the deadline of posting this, so I don't
you know
want
when
to do
I have
any edits.
Okay,
so let's go. If you want me to do it, let me know.
I'll just breeze over it. I'm just gonna light and breeze. I'm gonna be like Gray pronouncing a Swedish word. Are you ready?
Just going with it.
It's going with it. Let me glaze right over it. A bunch of scientists recover bits of Godzilla's flesh, and quickly a mustachioed man from Seradia decides that he wants them, so he shoots at them and murders them and steals them, but not before a scientist can use the bits of Godzilla's flesh to genetically engineer a rose mixed with his dead daughter's DNA and Godzilla's flesh, and then make a radioactive eating bacteria to combat Godzilla. All this time, Godzilla was awakened by the same terrorists, not the bioterrorists, but the actual Seradians, who blew up his hillside in order to release him in a bratty little threat, because they really wanted the Godzilla flesh, and when they didn't get it, they blew up the mountain. And then the newly created bioengineered Rose Godzilla girl has to stand strong and protect Tokyo from the grumpy Godzilla who was awakened from his den.
That being Biollante, the
no,
Rose
no, no. Oh, the
kaiju.
Yeah, the Rose kaiju girl.
Pretty good. I'm going to go with it. There was a few slight conflations of a few things, but I'm going
to
go with
it. I was trying to keep it moving.
Because honestly, it doesn't matter. Let's be.
Well, maybe my
clear.
Order. I mean, I.
Let's
I
be
mean,
clear.
That's the
doesn't
gist.
Matter.
That's the gist. Like, yeah. I breezed over how it happened because there's a lot of complicated things.
But
that
it doesn't
happen.
Matter because really,
I just
kind of
breezed
ultimately
through it.
What you want,
yeah, I'm
is you got
donut.
Godzilla versus this rose human bacteria spirited kaiju that is totally incredible looking.
And takes on many shapes and does a whole like metamorphosis. But I think that part of it too that it does in traditional Godzilla fashion is it raises these like intrinsic ethical questions.
Of course.
Such as we have this menace, which is Godzilla, who has become the monster that he is through radioactive materials. And is it ethical to bioengineer a bacteria that can fight these radioactive materials within Godzilla if that also means that it can neutralize the arms kind of standoff that the world has, because then it will render nuclear weapons ineffective and people will have to go back to murdering each other the old-fashioned way and there will be no more peace due to the nuclear standoff that we are currently in.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's got those great,
I know you're not going to edit, so you keep going. I'm going to close these blinds.
Go for it. I'm
going
to keep
so
going.
So unbelievably distracted by looking at things. I'm like a pet, like gazing out of the window, just like, what? Oh, was that guy moving over there in his apartment? What's he got? A dog? What's he got? Is he going to come this way? Is he going to bring his dog over here? Like, I can't even handle it. So I got to do it.
Go for it. Well, yeah. So Biollante is truly one of the coolest, most unique looking kaiju. The way that she is, and it is a she because it is the spirit of the scientist's dead daughter, daughter who dies in an explosion 5 years prior because he was doing research on the Godzilla cells and the group exploded it.
And they blew them all up.
And the daughter dies. So Erica is in the spirit of Biollante. But at a certain point, Erica does leave the Biollante's presence. And we know this because Mickey, the psychic youth,
mm-hmm.
She is just so great in this, and she can communicate with both Godzilla and Biollante. And as the series goes on, she has more of a she continues to have a connection with Godzilla. It's so great.
Yeah, and I'm so glad we got through just kind of perusing over what generally happens, because now we can kind of go into like some of the more fun details,
yes.
Such as why do I love Biollante so much, Mike? Because I think the former Tara that wrote all these notes really got it, and that is that the tortured rose monster is very Lana coded. I mean, if you're gonna have a dead lover's soul embodied in a rose, but then you mutate it with a monster, like there ain't nothing more Lana coded than that. And
yeah,
then
love it.
And then letting like Grumpy Godzilla, like the you know, the older daddy out of the pen, and then they kind of stand off against each other with their thorns and claws, like very letting G out of the crate. You
I
know
love
what
it.
I mean?
I love it. Well, their first battle is so great. Well, I love the first scene of Biollante when the camera, all the people are looking out at the water, and you only see the people looking at it, and all the news trucks are pulling up, and everyone's like staring and gasping, and then it pans over to Biollante, and it just really looks amazing and shocking because it just doesn't look like any other kaiju before or really since. It is actually stands alone as this totally unique kaiju,
and kind of what was pitched during this film is that it's plant versus animal. It's the same like mutated Godzilla flesh. One is manifested in animal and one is manifested in plant. So plants versus animal, who will win? Like, where's the bigger resiliency? So, and I think that tees up the idea of root systems, spores, mycelium, like all of the things that we see later in all of the incarnations of Biollante.
Yeah, because it's really great as it goes on. There's basically three versions of Biollante. The first one, the rose is closed. Then there's the open rose until finally it mutates.
Opens into like
this
a monster.
Total crazy monster by the final battle.
Yeah. But always with the tendrils, always with the root system.
Yeah, and the tendrils have these teeth and mouths that come out and attack Godzilla and are wrapping around him. And so the fights are really great. And they're really, you could just sit back and watch them.
I'm
going to
say, like, I thought that thorns would play more of a role in this as somebody who I enjoyed. The thing I miss.
You can see that.
One of the things I miss the most about our house in Michigan was the yard and the roses that I had. I had many rose bushes and I loved tending them. In California, no one would ever dream of tending their own plants in their own yard.
I mean, you know,
people don't do their own gardening here. It's insane. They don't. They have roses, but they have gardeners. But I enjoyed planting our rose bushes and having them, and then having the very old rose vines that were in our place. But they'll prick the shit out of you. Like, how many times did I get like super bloodied and like weird worms would grow them, and it'd be gross. A lot of gross things with the roses, a lot of pain. So I kind of thought that the thorns would
be. No thorns, really.
No, really, no thorns. Not a lot of teeth, a lot of teeth in the flower part. A lot of like vines, which roses don't really have vines. So I was a little, I was a little shocked by that aspect of the rose. And Mike, the other thing that shocked me was when they introduced the Super X2.
Yes.
The Super Times 2.
As you called it, the Super Times 2.
It is Super Times 2. The Super X was like a vessel that they had made out of titanium to fight Godzilla. And
the Japanese defense.
And then like people were like inside. But this is more of like a drone.
Yes.
And they had upgraded the Super X.
From the Return of Godzilla movie.
Yeah, and turned it into the Super Times 2. And it had this diamond shield that was supposed to take Godzilla's rays and point it back at him. And they made like a big deal out of it. And they made a big deal out of the Super Times 2. But Mike.
Tara.
Shocking. What a nothing burger it was. Well, like, look, really, it was just defeated pretty easily. We talk about this like lab created diamonds. They make a big deal out of it. And really,
I mean, it slows them down for a little bit.
No, it didn't. It didn't do anything.
It's not the most effective.
The Super Times 2 really could have just not even been there. And that's another element that I love about this film, though. I love the weird spies. Oh my God. There's so many things. Like, I feel like
Don't feel pressured, Tara. Sit back.
I'm just thinking of all the things that I love about this. Like, I don't want them to sound like criticisms because they kind of do. Like, it's not a criticism that the Super Times 2 is not more effective against Godzilla. It's more of like a, I love that they still included it. It made a show. It's like, it's confusing. You're like, is Super Times 2 going to save the day yet? Is something going to go on with this? And it just kind of blows up. You know what I mean? And then it's like the diamond reflector tries to work against Godzilla. Godzilla's too powerful and it just breaks down. It's just kind of like,
which is, it just demonstrates how powerful Godzilla
it's a device
is.
To demonstrate how powerful Godzilla was. But I love that they're just going for it. But another element that I love is that this is a film that is in Japanese with the subtitles, but then they have American spies who speak in English. But I'm going to kind of air quote it because impossible to understand. The Saradians speaking with the Japanese actors when they speak English, it's a wild
It would
journey.
Have been nice if Criterion would have subtitled them. Those. They subtitle them in Japanese.
Really hard to understand anything they're saying. And I do, you did translate for me a few times, Mike. It was like, oh, he's trying to say this. So that was just off the rails, terrible, unintelligible English, which is fantastic and it made me happy. And they're all like very wigged out, like with hair pieces, fake mustaches, wearing like the cheesiest, most like the suitiest suit that you could imagine that person would wear. So that I absolutely adored. But then the best is when they had the Americans in the spy truck and the Americans are like, hey, can you give me a hand with that cheeseburger? Or like, and they had that like overly exaggerated American accent.
Yeah.
And they're like explaining things in an American way and being Americans and wearing like American like flag ball caps and in like a salacious themed van. A wonderful element that I really, really wearing tank tops and kicking ass. Like, that was another element that I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, no, that's the thing is there's so many strange elements to this movie.
Yes.
And that's what makes it so much fun. And
do you think that's what, like, when Americans, like, have, like, British accents, is that what they sound like? Because they sound ridiculous, and it's fantastic. And but I love it. Like, I want them to sound like that. Like, oh, I wanted everybody to sound like that. But, yeah, it's real fun. I really enjoy that.
Yeah, the elements of trying to get the Godzilla cells and what they can do and what the bacteria can do to Godzilla. Again, it doesn't all add up necessarily. And ultimately, when you're watching a Godzilla movie, you're watching it for the Godzilla, the fights. I mean, it's wrestling, right? It's like, it's the story that leads up to the match.
Well, much like wrestling, Mike, I think we all watch it for different reasons. Like, maybe you're looking for some guys in a suit having an epic battle. I'm looking for the psychological aspects of it.
Well, I like it too.
I'm looking for the emotional roller coaster.
I like that it. I like that in wrestling too.
I want to feel that loss. I want to be taken down low, and then I want to be brought up high. Hey. I like the triumph of it all. Like, I like the triumph of the monster, or the triumph of the people. I like overcoming odds. That's another thing I like.
How excited are we about Cody and Cena? It's the story.
That's the story, man. Like, I'm loving the road to Mania.
Just like Godzilla and Biollante.
Exactly. So, again, like...
No, I like that, too. No, I mean, I'm saying I like that, too.
Biollante and Godzilla aren't monsters. The people who made them are, Mike. That is kind of part of it. Like, that's another psychological aspect I love. It made me think. It made me learn. It made me reflect upon our actions in a different way.
I was being slightly flippant, but yes, one thing that is great just about Godzilla in general and the greatest Godzilla movies are those psychological elements. Like I said, Godzilla Minus One really, really blew us away, and I think that's one of the greatest movies, modern movies.
Yes, it
is. And the main reason is the actual psychological drama that's contained within that movie. So yes, I'm being slightly jokey, but
yeah. I only chuckled when you said that because I was reading my own notes, which are very silly. But truly, yes, the original Godzilla, it's like
The original, of course, yeah.
And Godzilla Minus One, it's like a bunch of people who have gone through some traumatic events, lost people, lost the stabilization of their country, lost things like physically in terms of land and wealth.
And they're using this story to talk through that. So, no, I do actually take these movies very seriously.
But also to show the beauty and to show the triumph and to show the resilience. Yeah. And so I admire all of those things, which I also do believe are encapsulated in wrestling. And
absolutely.
Those are the things that I love and that keep me interested in it. So absolutely, I agree with you.
But there's also, obviously, with something like this movie, there is a fun, bonkers element of just everything being thrown at this movie.
There's some really bonkers. Well, first of all, this is a very wet film. Like, this makes Japan just seem like it's constantly pouring rain.
And it was
raining
when we were there.
It's either
greatest night was the rain night.
It's either raining or you're standing in a puddle of rain. Oh, the rain night was so fun.
Yeah,
it was a great night. But I guess I could read. Let's just say Fire Mirror is a big nothing burger. But anti-nuclear bacteria takes 6 to 12 hours to take effect on Godzilla, much like food poisoning. And then everybody suspects that Godzilla has a low temperature, Mike, because he's cold-blooded.
That's right.
And also because it's chilly outside because it's raining. And he has no time to get warm. And so they need to get Godzilla into the temperature danger zone above 41 and below 135. Now, see, this is the scientific approach that they're taking. They're like, look, we went to all this trouble. We took that flesh. We stole the flesh. We got this scientist to, like, get on board and to make this radioactive eating bacteria so that it can, like, make Godzilla sick and shrink him down to, like, lizard or whatever it's going to do, right? But he's too chilly because of bacteria, Mike. He's too chilly. So
they got to get Godzilla warm.
They got to get my guy. And I was thinking, like, maybe he's so grumpy because he's cold. And so then they decide, how do they decide to warm him up, Mike? They're going to shoot a microwave ray at him. We're going to microwave
him. Thunder control system, I want to say, is what it's called. Did you write that down? Is that about right?
Did not write it down. But I was worried that maybe if they go too far with the microwave rays, they're going to pasteurize my guy. And they're going to kill all the bacteria in it. So they really had to be super controlled about setting off those explosions under his feet to warm his little tootsies up, shooting him with microwave rays to get him into the temperature danger zone. So that the radioactive microbes can make him feel icky.
No, it makes sense. And yeah, so this is when, after he's fought Biollante, you know, basically they're even, Steven, and it looks like Biollante's dead. And I love, we need to talk about when Biollante, well, doesn't necessarily die, but goes up and these golden spores go up into the clouds. And I love that element.
Yeah, Biollante is metamorphizing into other things. Yes. So like when the rose is conquered and the rose is burned off, the spores ascend up into the skies. And that's when our psychic gal is like, oh, the spirit has gone.
Mickey, she's so great. Like I said, we see her for the next handful of movies, and she's just one of the best characters.
Oh, and oh my God. And then the portion of the film when they have the, hold on, wait, what is the place called? The mental science exploitation.
Yeah, the Temple of Psychic Youth.
No, the Mental Science Exploitation Center. It's the temple, so amazing.
The Temple of Psychic Youth.
and then they explain what they do.
Well, you got to say the great scene.
What do they do there? I said, I guess they hear the voice of a rose and try to grow roses in the desert and preserve scientists' semen, and then they have a seed bank.
Well, you got to talk, that is true.
The semen never came back to play. And I was really distracted by this, by the way, everyone.
I told you right away that it never came back into play.
I know, but if you hadn't told me, I would have been waiting for the semen for the entire movie. It's a seed bank, so we got the rose element, right? And then they want to grow roses in the desert, so we know they're rugged roses. But then they just throw in scientist semen in there. Like, I'm going to forget that and just not be waiting for it the entire film.
Well, hey, Tara, you know what?
There's no
I got you.
Semen.
I got you. Okay, you know what? You know,
waiting for it.
You are waiting for it. And Tara, you know what?
Let me call you a scientist.
I will go ahead.
You're like, I'm a scientist.
I got you after this. Don't worry.
Water.
Don't worry. But, no, the great scene is when Mickey's saying that all the kids in the institute are having the same dream. And when they go and say, what do we all dream about? And they all hold up drawings of Godzilla. It's so great.
And they all hold it. It's great. This, and it's like, da-da-da.
It's so great. No, I just, absolutely. Every scene in this movie is
fantastic. Is there anything, somebody says, I think I've made a huge mistake at one point. That's really fun. I mean, it's all great. But
go ahead.
One wonderful thing that was on the extras was that we learned that a dentist won a contest to write this film. They had,
the idea, yeah.
They had people write in a contest to see who could come up for the idea for the next monster, the next story, and it was a dentist.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I appreciate dentists. Do you know why? Because I need them.
Well, I was going to say, I think it all does lead up to the final battle, which is just so incredible. When Biollante then comes back and is this just insanely massive monster with all the tendrils, so towers over Godzilla.
And with the, because, you know, the rose kind of had this like glowing heart down low. And then the monster does too. But the way that the head is positioned is very like menacing, feral, kind of looks like it's in a charging position. And Biollante has these like tendrils that are above water, and it's kind of hunkered down and charging up at Godzilla. And it's like to that point where you like feel bad for Godzilla.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So much
of Godzilla, especially in this era, has that who's the heel and who's the face, right? And it shifts throughout even the battle or even the and I love that. And no, this scene's so great. It looks so great. There's points when Biollante's like coming forward, and it just literally looks like unlike any other of the Godzilla battles.
Yes, with all the like the plant tendrils just snapping at Godzilla, and you're like, oh, and man, and you know Godzilla feels kind of shitty, and you're like, I feel for you.
Well, and this is even one of the Godzillas where it does end with Godzilla basically walking away. He's not necessarily, he isn't killed, but he is sort of like defeated, but he sort of walks away. And this, and it's just that thing where it's like, well, he's not dead. It's such a cool way to end it.
Yeah, he needs to go snuggle up in a volcano and get warm and kind of like feel better. He's like, no, you know what? Fuck this. I feel like shit. I've been standing here. I wanted to fight this rose monster. It seemed cool. I wanted to go smash buildings in Tokyo. I wanted to go to Osaka and like suck up some nuclear reactors and eat some power plants and get my cool like spikes glowy
which they actually did in actually those spikes did glow in real time. Like it's actually the actual Godzilla costume did it, and the guy got electrocuted right away.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit. He's fine.
And, you know, anytime they show Osaka Castle, I get excited. I can't help it. I'm like, we're all there.
We love Osaka Castle. Yeah, it's cherry blossom season. I can't help it.
You know, I can't help, you know, it is one of those things, and I know anyone listening, you've heard us talk about Japan for a year, but it is one of those things where everyone who goes, you come back and you can't stop talking about it. It's, it's hard to, it is hard to explain, and all I hope are talking about it does is make you want to go there, because, I mean, it's just like, I just want everyone to go there.
It's like when we eat a donut and we just can't stop talking about it.
Hey, look.
It's even more lasting than a donut.
It's way better than a donut.
It is.
I'm probably gonna, I can't decide if I'm going to finish that donut or have some of that lemon meringue pie that you brought home for me.
Well, it's your birthday treat.
I appreciate it, Tara. I do appreciate it.
You deserve it.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Maybe you could dip the donut in the lemon meringue pie.
Really go for it?
I really love meringue.
My big thing right now is what...
Meringue over whipped cream all day long.
Yeah. My big thing right now is what are we gonna watch now after we record? Because I've been going back and forth a little bit. I'm like, I am kind of in the mood for another Godzilla movie because I'm just in the zone. Do we go with just, you know, Sleepaway Camp? Do we just put on the classic? Like,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
it's
what I mean?
Your
like,
call.
I know. I know. I'm just, and I'm like not sure. You know what I mean? I'm not. I just don't know.
There's only one way to find out, sir.
To put something out. Well, look, this movie, and look, there's so much. I just want everyone to watch this, and it's cool because, like I said, it just came out, so we picked up the Criterion disc, but you can very easily rent it now. It was one that was unavailable streaming for a while, even for rental, but now I'm pretty sure since it's on Criterion, it's pretty easy to watch.
Yeah, and I think this is a nice balance between the more like serious, somber aspects and very campy, silly, off the rails.
It does mix it
style.
Together. Yeah. It is a great bridge.
No,
I agree.
But again, much like wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep comparing this film to wrestling.
Well,
why
wouldn't you? It was obviously a massive influence, especially in Japan, and especially the way Godzilla fought in the older movies was literally doing like drop kicks and hip tosses you know, it was literally doing wrestling moves, you know?
So it's a real pleasure to watch, and it's not just like funny. Like sometimes you watch a film that's poorly executed and you're like, this is hilarious. Like this is more than that. Like we were having a little fun with it,
but ultimately, yes, I do think that this is a movie that I would, we just really loved, and I'm so glad.
It's absolutely original. There's not, you know, it's not, it's its own thing.
We loved it, and man, I wish we were back at the Godzilla store. I wish we
go
were...
grab my Godzilla tote. But let's look at our Godzilla magnet.
Well,
I
assume we will put on the for the episode picture somewhere. We'll have us in front of the Godzilla at the store. Somewhere in the lands, but yeah. Oh, hey, I had picked out what we're gonna do for episode 10. You know, kind of a 10 episode.
Oh,
10.
Okay.
And you know, I meant to mention it
Jason
before.
X.
That does sound like fun. I think eventually what we'll do,
because that's 10.
Well, you know what I think eventually what we'll do with the Friday 13th, because I've been thinking about that, because we did do that episode where we talked about every single Friday the 13th. Back on home time when we did the Blu-ray set. I think eventually we'll just put that up here.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know what I mean? Like, because it's like a 2-hour episode.
Oh, yeah.
But no, let's go back to some pornography for episode 10, and let's do Neon Knights. Let's cover Neon Knights.
I love Neon Knights.
So prepare for that.
I'm going to have to condition my hair a lot, because if I watch Neon Knights, I'm going to need big hair.
Yeah. Well,
I gotta prepare.
It's gonna be great. The new Melusine edition. We'll be watching that. So prepare for that. And yeah, I don't know. We'll know what we're gonna watch. I'm gonna decide. I'm gonna finish this Guinness here.
I think I have a cool Neon Knights outfit on now.
You definitely do.
I went in for a classic, the classic lace slip. Satin robe style.
Yeah. Terry, you look great.
It's really important. It's a very important style.
I'm excited to go have some steaks and some martinis. And yeah,
I'm excited to go with you. Whenever it's your birthday, we'll do all of your heart's desire. So let's get it moving.
You heard it. You heard it here first. It's on record. Well, thank you everyone for the support and for listening. We've been having a lot of fun over here and got a lot of great stuff lined up. And you know, we've talked about doing some other episodes that aren't movies, maybe some interviews and some other stuff. So we do have some other ideas for different types of episodes here and there, but you know, I think we really enjoy having a movie be the main focus. It just gives that grounding topic for our conversation. But we do have some ideas, some interview ideas. So as we continue with the series, we'll continue growing what underground espionage can be. Today it was Godzilla and donuts.
Yeah, and I had a whole thing that I was going to tell you all about silkworms and silk moths. And maybe that'll just have to wait till next time. I bet they wear silk in Neon Knights, so I can
could be probably or all maybe I was trying to think of a movie that could, another movie, the silk? Know, Tremors.
Oh, there's no silkworms, and we would talk about Reba McEntire and Tremors, and pipe bombs and worms. No, yeah, who could it? Well, I guess Mothra.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much. Talk to you next week.